Recently, I happened to tune in to an episode of the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond. You know that one? I was in and out of the room, so I didn't catch all of what was going on. I was probably, I don't know, folding laundry or getting dressed or something. But what I picked up was that the two main characters, Ray and Deborah, were sitting up in bed, and she told him that if she died, she thought she would like him to date her friend Linda. Then she got a little miffed that he seemed so excited by the possibility. In turn, Ray said that if he died, he'd like her to date his friend Pete. And Deborah objected to that suggestion, protesting that Pete was unattractive in so many ways. Well, how did it turn out? I didn't stick around to see the whole episode, but I applauded the writers for their courage in using comedy to address an important topic. They addressed the reality that everyone, even funny, beloved sitcom characters, everyone will die someday. Everyone. I'm going to die. So are you. As syndicated newspaper columnist Ellen Goodman puts it, death rates remain at 100%. Today's observance honoring the memories of our dear ones, our forebears, our ancestors in the faith. This observance is meaningful because death is a universal experience. It will touch each of us. Now, we may pretend that it won't. Some decisions we make indicate a mindset that we'll be around forever. We avoid talking about a world without us in it. We don't raise the subject with those closest to us. Maybe we fear that even talking about our death will bring it on sooner. It reminds me of how baseball players in the dugout won't talk to the pitcher who's throwing a no-hitter, lest even talking about it puts a jinx on it. Maybe we worry that talking about death will upset someone. Maybe we're afraid to imagine what medical or behavioral or financial difficulties we may experience in our final days or months or years. And so for many of us, we avoid the subject altogether. But today I want to talk about preparing for death, because preparing for our eventual death affirms our faith in God. Healthy thinking and talking about death can help dispel any anxiety we may feel about our eventual demise. And we have biblical grounds for talking about death as a way of preparing ourselves and others for that eventuality. Today's text from the Old Testament book of Genesis presents a scene featuring the sly old Jacob, the father of all those sons, including the famous Joseph of the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat fame. Yeah. Well, Father Jacob knows that he's dying, so he gathers his sons around him, and he tells them what he has arranged for them. And he concludes then by giving them specific instructions for his burial, so there's no question what he wants. And as for Jesus, well, of course, he gave many instructions to his disciples, such as at the Last Supper when he told them to remember him whenever they ate or drank. And speaking to the disciples and the crowds in his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus instructed them to lead lives free of worry about daily necessities because God knows what they need. Jesus pointed to the birds of the air, the flowers of the field, as examples of God's assurance of care. And in today's passage from John's Gospel, as Jesus prepared to be separated from his disciples by the aggressive actions of the religious and civil leaders, Jesus gave them specific instructions, a new commandment, he called it. Instructions to love one another. As I have loved you, Jesus said, so you must love one another. So yes, the Bible gives examples of faithful people talking about death in ways that are helpful to themselves and helpful to others. Topics related to our eventual death are often grouped under the term end-of-life issues. There are a lot of issues, and that can be overwhelming. And they can be complex issues, and that can be overwhelming. This week's column from our parish nurse, Kathy Patton, in the Life of the Church section of your bulletin is one that you should take home with you and read it again later this week. Don't put it in the box. Take it home with you. In it, she describes four things you can do to have more control over your life and your end of life. She mentions durable power of attorney for medical care, advanced medical directive, a living will, a do not resuscitate order. Now, these things can be legally and medically technical, and most of us have not been equipped to make informed decisions by years in medical school or law school. But you have to start somewhere. You can start by having the talk. Now, the talk I'm referring to is not the conversation you have with your pre-adolescent about the functions and consequences of human anatomy, though that's an important talk to have. The talk is not the conversation about how to behave if you are stopped by a police officer. The talk is not the advice you give as you drop off your child at college for the very first time. No, here's the talk that each of us needs to have. The talk is about what kinds of treatments you do and do not want if you get sick and you can't speak for yourself. The talk is about who you want to represent you when you cannot speak for yourself. The talk identifies your preferences about medical procedures if your illness were to be irreversible and terminal. The talk is about what funeral arrangements you would like. The talk is about what to do with your possessions when you no longer need them. The talk is about where to find your passwords to social media and online accounts, where to find insurance information, where to find family records. Who do you have the talk with? Well, the obvious answer is to talk with people in your home and your family. But that's not always practical, is it? Families are ever more scattered. Sometimes family dynamics are distant or combative, and that can make it near impossible to have thoughtful, respectful, productive discussions. So you could talk with your nurses and doctors. They want to know what your wishes are. It helps them in planning your medical care for you, but of course they can't help you with funeral plans or with will and estate matters. Another place you could start to have the talk is at church. Perhaps there's a friend here that you've grown to trust and even to confide in. They care about you, but they also maintain a perspective and objectivity that a family member wouldn't have. You could talk with a church staff member, maybe me, our director of Christian education, the parish nurse, someone else. The church can be a safe, comforting, supportive place to start talking about end-of-life issues. Recently, I learned of an organization called the Conversation Project, which encourages people to take charge of end-of-life decision-making. The Conversation Project has free resources online, and now I have them too. They're really helpful in taking those first baby steps toward talking about end-of-life issues and then making decisions about them. You can see a sample. It's right inside the church office. And among the tools that they offer is what they call the Where I Stand Scales. Where I Stand. Here's how it works. A statement ends with two opposing positions, and you decide if you prefer one or the other, or maybe you land somewhere in between. I'll give you an example. One of the statements is, as I receive care, I would like, and then at one end it says, I would like my healthcare team to do what they think is best. At the other end, I would like to have a say in every healthcare decision. And so for each such statement, you decide if you'd land at one end of the scale or the other end, or you would land somewhere in the middle. And even if you've never given this any thought before, this can help you start to see what kind of plans you'd like to make. If this all this conversation about end-of-life planning isn't overwhelming enough, I also encourage you to think about two other things. If you don't have a will to indicate what you would like to have happen with your possessions and assets, the state of Ohio will make those decisions for you. And maybe that's okay with you. But if not, you should have a chat with an attorney. And if you don't know who to talk to, ask your friends, ask your colleagues, ask me. Many people have attorneys they'd be happy to recommend to you. We have a bunch of attorneys right in this room. And you know, you don't have to have all the answers worked out before you meet with an attorney. She or he will help you figure out what answers are right for you. I wonder how many of you saw in last Sunday's Plain Dealer, they had a short article about easy ways to get started with the seemingly intimidating process of writing a will. I've posted that article on my office door. Stop by and take a look. How to get started. The other thing to think about is how you would like your family and friends to memorialize you when you die. Our church provides a funeral planning guide to help you think through many of the questions that come up when preparing a funeral or memorial service. The ushers will have copies of these out in the lobby as you leave. You can take one with you. You don't have to fill in all the blanks at once, but you could get started. Wouldn't that be a relief to be able to say, I've started? Answer what you know. And then you can consider the options that remain. Anything you can indicate is such a relief to your family when they have to make funeral arrangements. So fill it out as best you can. Give copies to your family. Give copy to your attorney. Especially give one to me. We maintain a file of funeral plans in the church office. And you can always update it anytime you want. You don't need to have the talk right now. Maybe you're just not quite ready. Maybe you need some time to warm up to the idea, to deal with some of your own emotions. The point is, we should not live our lives overwhelmed by the fear of dying. That's the point of an old story that I came across again recently. A doctor visited his patient who had just moved into a nursing home. And as the doctor prepared to leave, the man said to him, "Doctor, I'm afraid to die. Tell me what lies on the other side." Very quietly, the doctor said, "I don't know." "You don't know," the man said. "You, a devout Christian, you don't know what's on the other side?" The doctor was holding the handle of the door, and just then on the other side came a sound of scratching and whining. And as the doctor opened the door to the hallway, the man's dog sprang into the room, followed by the man's son, who had brought the pooch as a surprise and comfort for his dad. The dog leaped up on the bed with an eager show of gladness. And turning to his patient, the doctor said, "Now, notice your dog. He'd never been in this room before. He didn't know what was inside. He knew nothing except that his master was here. And when the door opened, he sprang in without fear." The doctor said, "I know little of what is on the other side of death, but I do know one thing. I know my master is there. And that is enough. And when the door opens, I shall pass through with no fear, but with gladness." The point is that we should not live our lives overwhelmed by the fear of dying. As we remember, especially on this All Saints Sunday, this glorious opportunity we're given to live the lives we lead in this wonderful world is only a small part of what God has in store for us. God calls us to live not with fear, but with confident hope. Amen.